Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
You have arrived. Welcome to the Aspie World. Here's where we talk about anything and everything ASD in an upbeat and informative way. And now, here's your man on the spectrum, your autism ambassador, Daniel Morgan Jones.
Guys, welcome back to another episode of the Aspie World podcast. It's really good. I'm enjoying this season so far. I've had some really good guests on, and I think all my guests have been women. I think for this, yeah, I know this whole season's women. So I have another guest with me today, Jenny. So Jenny, do you want to take it away and tell us who you are, what you do, and all that stuff, so we know who you are?
All right. Hi, Dan. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
I'm Jenny Sandler, and I am a teacher, basically, but I have evolved. I have a company called Homeschool UK, and I specifically support children who are autistic, dyslexic, and or have ADHD. I help them by teaching them one-to-one. I have consultations with their parents and their schools, explaining the best way for them to learn or the best way to manage the home environment or the school environment. I give training to schools. And wow. I spend my time working with some fantastically creative and beautiful children. And so I love my job.
Oh, that's amazing. So how long have you been doing this for?
I have been working like this for about 13 or 14 years. Before that, I was a traditional teacher in school in a classroom.
Holy smokes. And so is it a lot different to, like, you know, schooling traditionally in a classroom versus schooling kind of one-to-one? Like, is it completely different or is it very similar? You just got a different tag audience?
I think that there are similarities and differences. A lot of classroom teaching is classroom management and making sure everyone is doing what they're supposed to be doing and rewarding and consequences, and also trying to deliver a particular lesson that in a way that everyone can understand. When you work one-on-one, you generally don't have any behavioral challenges. And you can teach exactly what that child needs to learn, and you can teach them in exactly the way that they need to be taught, which often if you are dyslexic or autistic or have ADHD is slightly different to the way mainstream teaching is undertaken in the classroom. But one of the things that I do is that I explain to schools and teachers what they can do to adapt the way they teach so that it is suitable for anyone who's neurodivergent. And I think that's really, really hard. We have in our head as teachers, you know, there's differentiation. So you make something easier, you make something harder, but actually you can adapt the way you teach so that it's just really inclusive, that using specific techniques that might work best for someone who's dyslexic, but just because you're using that technique, it doesn't mean that anyone who's not dyslexic isn't going to still learn from that. So a really, really, really simple example I often give is you can enlarge the font. Dyslexic children and a lot of neurodivergent children and adults prefer to have the font made bigger, the spaces enlarged. Now, just because you don't need larger font, it doesn't mean that it's detrimental to your learning by having larger font. So things like that, ways that teachers can support the children who they know have learning differences, but also by teaching this way, you're going to pick up you're going to be accommodating and supporting children who may have something going on and you don't even know. And at least this way, everyone's getting a fairly good education.
Interesting. You mentioned behavioral challenges, and I'd like to touch on this. You know, would you say that teaching type or learning type equals or has a direct correlation to behavioral issues? Because you said when you're one-on-one with kids, you don't really have behavioral issues, right? So that would mean that because the environment that they're in a typical school would mean that that's triggering a behavior. Is that what you mean?
Well, definitely that's part of it. So if you're in, let's just talk about the environment for a moment and not even address the cognition and learning and the teaching. If you're in an environment that is not conducive to your best learning because it's too loud or because it's too distracting, and I mean, even talk about like classroom clutter, visual clutter. So there's lots of things on the wall or all the supplies. So for example, all the math manipulatives, the math toys that teachers have, if they're visible, that's going to potentially distract someone. And instead of focusing on what you need to be focusing on, you're actually looking at something else. Or if other children are noisy, or if there are smells, or if the lights are all wrong. So all of that can cause someone who is experiencing sensory difficulties in that environment to behave in a way that is perhaps not desirable. And it's not because they're being naughty or they're mucking around. It's because all does not feel well within them. And that's that behavior is communicating that all does not feel well. Then if we shift to the learning methods, if you need an adaptation, so if you need the bigger font, for example, or if you find that the teacher's delivered a lesson, they've explained something, but you've forgotten what they've said because you have working memory challenges, then of course you're going to act out in a way because you're bored or you're frustrated. And so which is why I don't have that one-on-one. If a student isn't understanding something, we can go through it. I can explain in a different way. So definitely certain adaptations to the classroom environment and the way that lessons are delivered could improve behavior without having to use specific behavioral management systems.
Interesting. Okay, so in terms of the schooling model, here's the thing. You know, I think like, because you're coming from a background of actual just teaching and education and then going into more specifics, right? So I always feel like the school system is very archaic. Like it's very old. The way schools are set up was designed to create individuals ready for factory working. That was the Isambard Kingdom Brunel, you know, boom. And it hasn't changed since, you know, like, and do you feel like this has a detrimental impact on people, especially with cognitive ability that is divergent? So you have like kids on the spectrum may not as be interested in, say, let's say sports, right? Playing football or whatever, but they might be more interested in doing things like, I don't know, planting trees or cultivating, you know, food or, you know, I don't know. Do you feel like this, the school system needs radical change, or is it just me being kind of like this center left weirdo?
No, I think it needs change. I'm not sure I would go as far as to say radical, because I do believe that there are some things that are useful for all of us to learn. And for example, you've said sports. You gave sports as an example of something that an autistic person might not like, or for that matter, any person might not like. But I think we can all agree that having exercise is important.
100%.
Learning math, as much as someone might not like it or say it's irrelevant because we can do everything on a calculator, I hope we all agree that having a foundation in math is important. So I agree that schools are not designed for the type of learners that we have. And I don't think they're designed for sort of the society that we're living in right now with work, you know, with all this technology and AI and working remotely, working collaboratively, but in different ways. So I do think that things need to change and shift. And I think they are as well, because if I look at how my children are taught in school compared to how I was taught, it's not the same as it was in the 80s and 90s. So things are shifting, just perhaps not in the way that we need them to. And I also think that there are schools that are being really innovative, and certainly some independent schools that have the resources, the financial resources, are able to give a significantly broader area of subjects that children can get stuck into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. You know, like, you have those ridiculous arguments. So you're like, oh, nobody needs algebra. Well, in actual fact, we use algebra every day, but people don't really realize it. But I think, you know, there are certain things like, yes, you know, now we are all walking around with a personal digital assistant in our pocket. That should be included. You know, it's only going to increase in its popularity and its use. It's like, kind of like, you know, I don't know, people would say, like, you know, if I was my grandfather, he'd say he didn't have shoes to go to school with. You know what I mean? And yeah, so well, now everyone has shoes.
Uphill both ways in the snow, right?
Yeah, that kind of thing. And I remember him saying to me, you paid 50 pence a year to go to school. This is, you know, he was born in 1920. And, you know, you go to school barefoot because you couldn't afford shoes. And so you can't say that, oh, we can't teach, you know, from a standpoint of having cell phones with us because not everyone's going to have a digital assistant. Well, they will. You know, they do now. Kids now, and it's just like shoes. It was a technology at the time that was becoming more and more popular, more and more affordable as the things went on. And now we teach kids that we have to have, you know, football trainers for school. We have to have school shoes for school, you know? Yeah. And that's not, it's not to do with economics. That's to do with societal change and evolution. So I do think, like you say, you know, all the things, the technology we're using now is only going to improve. And if we keep teaching without using those methods to incorporate it in a large way, I think we are definitely leaving kind of opportunity and stuff on the table. Because what happens is you have a school kid who becomes 16 to 18 who then has to then relearn all those things if they didn't have that tutoring in school. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, but I think schools are using technology as much as they can, and perhaps sometimes just limited by the number of iPads or Chromebooks that they can afford.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing actually that I do want to point out that I think schools are doing that's important that we probably didn't have as children is a much greater focus on social and emotional well-being and positive mental health and, you know, citizenship and a lot of that, which is important, you know, for growing up to be a well-rounded, happy person. And I also think one thing, because I, in my work, I often get very critical of what I see is happening in schools or what, you know, my students report to me. And I get very kind of defensive and, you know, this isn't right. You deserve better. Yeah. On the other hand, though, I can also see from the school's perspective that, first of all, schools are not given a lot of money.
No.
So they are under-resourced. They have. Yeah. But so much responsibility. So when I think about what a school did for me and possibly for you when we were younger, is the school's job was to educate us. We basically had to be competent in reading, writing, math, bit of science, bit of history. And I'm talking about primary school,
just general. Primary. Yeah, yeah.
But now schools have to make sure that children aren't hungry, children have clothes, children are not depressed. Children have access to sports. It's not the schools are much more involved with the big picture.
Yeah,
and that is it's important, and
it is, and
it's important that we're aware of that as well. So, you know, when I'm thinking, like, take my own children for example, when I'm thinking, why aren't they doing this level of math? You know, my child's really capable. She should be doing this math. Well, actually, they're doing the best they can, but they're giving her a hell of a lot more than just math, you know, with everything else that they provide.
Mm-hmm. I think, like, and you're absolutely right. You know, that old saying of, like, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, right? And I think that comes from the old times where we used to have the churches the clergy used to run the schools, but the clergy came from a charitable point of view. So they would have fed the children. They would have made sure their clothes, they would have made sure that their well-being was okay. They'd be the third parent in this kind of, like, raising of a child. But we lost that, you know, we lost that over the years because, you know, things progress. Very interesting though, and it is a fascinating subject. We could talk about it for hours. But so with your job now, working one to one with kids, what would you say the most common issues that you're coming across? Like, what's the thing that keeps cropping up time and time again? You're like, this every time I go there, and this issue is the number one.
Is reading. I mostly teach children how to read.
Holy smokes. Why do you think this is?
Well, probably because I have a lot of experience in teaching children how to read, and I have a master's in dyslexia, so therefore people come to me for that. But no, joking aside, because reading is, for many people, is sort of a simple process that you can learn quite easily. But for a lot of, well, for a few people, it's not. It's much harder to figure out how to read. And reading is taught in a very specific way in schools, and that way does not work for everybody. And one of the things that I do that I think is really successful is that I create my own books for the children that I'm teaching to read that are of interest to them. So if I'm teaching someone, and it's not just someone who's autistic, it started this way. It started, you know, with me wanting to make sure that the autistic children I was teaching were really interested. So I would always ask in advance, what are your special interests? Or I'd ask the parents what they're interested in. And I would create a book about that interest. But it's really useful for everyone because you need to be engaged. You need to want to do there. Because a lot of times by the time a child has come to me, they're very switched off. So I need to get in there with what they like and pitch the book at their level. And I can select my own vocabulary. And I kind of at first don't really use the method from school. I just use my method, which is words that I think the child needs to know and wants to know, and then words in the same families. And then once we're kind of happy reading, then I bring back in the phonics and go from both angles.
Interesting. Like, so do you think, and this is a broader question, and you're probably the best person to ask for this. So I'm dyslexic, like super dyslexic, I wrote my book by dictating it to my iPhone whilst on a treadmill. So that's how I did it. And my handwriting is atrocious. Like you wouldn't believe that my handwriting is just horrendous.
I don't think that's so bad.
But it goes to the fact that, like, I have no real dominant hand, right? I write my left hand is just as bad as writing my right hand. So it's not really, and my son is exactly the same. But and the thing that I think is most interesting is I can have my computers read to me, which is exceptionally more efficient because, and let me tell you something interesting. So my brain is going a bazillion miles an hour. And when my,
Can I guess what you're going to say?
You can guess, but I think you'll be wrong in the second half.
I think you're going to say you speed everything up when you listen.
That's the first half. I speed everything up. I speed all the videos, speed all my books, speed all my podcasts, everything. And I can just digest it at the level my mind is going. When I'm trying to read something, I can't read it fast enough because I'm having to really digest the symbols, really look at those symbols, trying to understand it. And then I get roadblocked. And it's the first thing in learning. If you don't understand the spelling and if you don't understand what a word is said, then the rest of it loses all context.
Yeah, so, definitely.
There's another thing that's really important with me and how I visually learn things is symbols. And symbols is not reading. Symbols is recognition of something that identifies, like, you know, a stop sign means don't go there. You know what I mean? It doesn't say don't go here because it's dangerous. You just know it because you see the symbol. Yeah. So would you say that words have less, reading words has less power now versus like symbols and having things read to you? Because if you're a blind person or a person who's partially sighted, you have to have things read to you anyway.
Yeah. I think that, well, two things. First of all, I want to just say that we're really lucky that we are living in this age where we are, where you can have audiobooks and you can have a computer read something to you, and you can get these special pens that scan the text and read to you because it's transformative. Yeah. And it takes a lot of pressure off and a lot of the anxiety that comes with learning to read. In terms of symbols, there are a group of people, most likely, I don't want to generalize, but oftentimes autistic people and some dyslexic people read better by recognizing the symbols that are the words. So instead of being able to piece together the letters and the different phonemes that they make, which we call using, reading with phonics, they recognize the whole word because the word has a shape.
A look, yeah, yeah.
Yes. And oftentimes people will learn to read just like that. And what can happen is you start recognizing words as a symbol, as a whole, and then you start recognizing pieces of that word or that word in part of another word. And that was actually how people were taught in the 80s.
Because that's how I learned to read, yeah.
Yeah, and it shifted. But I'm not saying that sight word method is now sort of no longer in vogue for reading, but it's not a bad method. Phonics is in vogue and phonics is good. I'm not saying, you know, children shouldn't learn phonics, but it's a combination. I'd say an average, you need to use a combination of methods. And there are some people who can only learn to read with phonics and some people who can only learn to read with sight words. But what you'll find is that if you are a sight word reader, if you do sort of use that symbol method, you'll be able to read words that other people may find very difficult because a long, complicated word the symbol is brighter, if that makes sense.
100%. Okay. Yeah.
So you'll find reading more complicated words that you've recognized much easier than reading things like then, there, this, and
homophones.
They.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, not just homophones, but words that look similar, like they.
Yes,
and
the short
them.
Ones. I have this right? exact experience. My girlfriend's like, how do you read like, you know, very complex words, but you're very bad at reading the small ones? And that's exactly why, because I recognize them as, yeah, they're bigger, aren't they? They stand out and you remember them. I mean,
if you think of the, you know, on, O-N, and N, N-O, like the shortest words in the alphabet kind of thing, but they are very similar looking. Mm-hmm. So
that's super interesting.
I'm not sure. I kind of forgot what your original question was, but
my question was really, really simple. Do you think that symbols and kind of like technology hold more weight to a person's development and learning versus traditional kind of like analog reading? The th is th, and then e is the. You know what I mean? Like,
so I think that for children and adults who struggle with reading, technology is a very useful and powerful tool. And to understand, I guess if you're a teacher who's younger and has, you know, trained more recently and was taught to read using the phonics approach, to recognize that sometimes the old-fashioned sight word or using logographs is also a valid way to support reading. And for some children is the better way.
Yeah, yeah. I just find it fascinating because I always find workarounds, and my workarounds are always kind of not traditionally what people are using. You know, I mean, I'm thinking, well, it works for me and it works really, really well. You know, is this kind of frowned upon? I don't know, interesting. Okay, so here's a question. What's the most challenging type of client you come across? What's the most challenging part? Like,
so, okay, so sometimes I work with children who have been asked to leave their school. That's how I got started, actually. That's how I sort of became this homeschool teacher. I was working with autistic children, mostly autistic, who had been asked to leave mainstream school. They were in independent schools for the most part, which is a little bit different. An independent school can ask someone to leave much easier than a state school. Mm-hmm. And because of that whole experience, and they'd been through a really rough time and a lot of negativity and a lot of trauma, I get a lot of pushback from these children because everything is hard. If you have learning differences, learning can be hard. If you've had a really rough time in an educational environment, then teachers can be scary. So I often have to work through that. And I can't just jump in and say, right, you know, we're going to do reading and writing. And even if I'm have a method that's more appealing to that child, I often can't just jump in with that. And what I find is that I need to really, really step back and give them more support than I know that they need, just so that they can build up their confidence and learn to trust me that I'm not
going. Yeah, you're not there to judge them. And, yeah.
Yeah. But what kind of makes that challenging, and this is probably more my own issue, is that when you're hired to do a job,
yeah,
and someone's paying you to teach their children, you want to do it. You want to get results. You want to show them that, you know, I want to show them I'm doing the best I can and your child is learning how to read. And I kind of know, well, actually, I'm not going to get results right away. I have to go really slow. So I often have that sort of struggle. But usually parents are very understanding. You know, that's in my head, that the pressure is from me, not from them.
Interesting. So we're running out of time, but I really want to ask my final kind of question before I ask, you know, how can people get in touch with you and stuff, is what has been the best experience for you? Just, you have to pick one experience of your job working one-to-one with kids. What's been the best experience? Has there been one time you're like, wow, this has blown me away, and you come home all emotional and really happy? Like, has that ever happened?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the time. I don't think there's been one. I mean, if there has been a moment that really stood out, I can't remember it right now because I'm old and getting forgetful. But
You're not old. We're like the same age, aren't we? You just call me old.
Well, yeah, I did. well, I can speak for myself that I'm getting a little bit forgetful. But I just, when I see children that they're doing something that they couldn't do before, that they're reading, that they're able to do the math, that they have a bounce in their step, you know, like these aha moments. But I want to share, as well as being a teacher, I have an autistic son, and I think a lot of the amazing feelings I get is when I see that he's being successful, that he's he's going on to secondary school next year, and he's done 11 plus, and he's done really, really well, and he's put up with a lot of challenges. Or randomly, he's injured himself. He ruptured his ACL playing football, and he's had surgery, and he's been off sports. He can't play football for a year. He's not allowed to run, and he's a really, really active, busy, busy kid. And it's so hard and so frustrating. And I'm just amazed with how he's managing and dealing with it, even if it's hard for him. Mm. And so I think I'm sort of regularly amazed and blown away by the resilience that children have, and sort of their spirit, and how they can get on with life even when it's hard.
Mm-hmm. So. Interesting. No, that's lovely. And so if people want to learn more about you and find you online, do you have like an Instagram page or a website? Like, how do people get in touch with you?
So I have a website. It's homeschooluk.com. Cool. I do have Instagram. I do have LinkedIn. I do have Facebook. I'm not great with any of those things.
Okay.
Well, so the best way to get in touch with me is on my website, and you can reach me through there or LinkedIn.
Okay, cool. If you give me a LinkedIn link, I'll put it in the description of this video if anybody's wanting to find her on LinkedIn. Awesome. This is a really interesting episode, and I've never had this conversation before. So thank you so much for being on the show, Jenny.
My pleasure. And thank you for having me. It's been fun for me as well.
It's been awesome. Hey guys, thank you so much for checking out this podcast. Make sure you are subscribed, because there are people listening right now who are not subscribed to this podcast. I can see you. Make sure you subscribe. Okay guys, see you in the next one. Peace.